My goal is just to not cry in talking about Avalon. Okay. That's my goal. If we can have that happen.
So you hadn't seen it before.
Oh, no, I had seen it, but apparently I have memory loss and I forgot how emotional it is. And I decided to watch it on the day that you and I were supposed to talk. I was so glad that that didn't work out because I was a hot mess. I was seriously so... Because, why did I do that? Why did I do that right before the interview was too much?
It's a really emotional ending.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. It's... oh, Jesus. Yeah. I'm still there. Anyway, okay, let's see if we got the thumbs up here on our end, and I'm assuming you're good to go on your end. Do you have water? Do you have everything you need?
Yeah, I'm good.
A massage therapist there? Somebody to touch you while this goes on? Okay. So I know, I've been reading your work for many, many years, and especially have really, really loved your writing around movies. So I'm especially curious...
Thank you.
To know how you answer this question, which is, where does your love of movies come from?
Wow, where does my love of movies come from? That's a good one. It comes from watching them. I guess I just really love stories. You know, maybe one of the defining things about me, and I didn't even realize it until sort of later in life, you know, when I was a teenager, but I really love just stories. So movies, TV shows, books, my grandfather was a great storyteller. He was a house painter by trade, but he could hold a room and just enthrall an audience without meaning to, you know what I mean? It wasn't like he would be ever, I never saw him on stage, but I saw him perform all the time at little family gatherings and holidays, Christmas, the 4th of July, people, you know, gathered after the fireworks to have watermelon and beer and Coca-Cola. Like, he would start telling a story about something. And I loved listening to him. And I especially loved listening to him when there were other people around. And I could watch them and hear him tell a story that I knew, that he had told me before, and watch them react to it. And, yes, so stories have just always been meaningful to me. I think they're how we orient ourselves in life. A good story helps you understand the world a little better.
It's amazing.
Movies are a part of that.
And movies are a huge part of that, yeah. Because when a movie is done right, it's because the story's done right.
Yeah, you know, it's fun to relive them. Like, I would get a movie on pay-per-view as a kid. You remember pay-per-view, where you dial in and you... Like, now it's just like you order it up on, you know, your iPad and cast it to your television. Anything you want is at your fingertips. But back when I was a kid, you had to call the cable company and say, I would like to watch Innerspace at 1:30 when you're showing it. And
try not to be embarrassed by what you're ordering.
We never ordered anything that was, you know... outside the mainstream. as kids, it would be like, oh, here, you know, we'll watch. I remember The Living Daylights, that James Bond film, was one that we got. And if you got it on pay-per-view, that meant when the signal stopped being wavy, you could record it and you could keep that movie. And owning movies was a big deal in the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, to buy a video cassette was hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, it literally was.
And this way you could own it and watch it 100 times. And so we would watch some of these films over and over again and know them inside and out. And at that point, it's just like listening to a song you love. You're not really discovering anything new about it. You're just sort of enjoying what it is. And I would go to the video store and beg them for posters. You know, they had the posters on the wall to promote whatever was new or what was coming out. And I'd be like, can I have that Great Outdoors poster or, you know, that...
you had me at John
Dirty
Candy.
Rotten Scoundrels poster.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did have a lot of John Candy. I actually had... The Great Outdoors and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Uncle Buck is still one of my favorite films
Buck. Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that one.
Well, and you could also, because of video cassette, you could actually wear out tapes. That was something you could do. You could break the tape because you watched it too much.
And you had no idea how terrible it looked, you know, until I remember getting a DVD for the first time and watching it on my computer and being like, wow, this looks amazing. Like, tapes look like crap. I had no idea.
By comparison, so true. Well, you know, it's really meaningful to me that you talked about your grandfather because reading some of your writing about him, it was so clear to me that Sam, you know, the character that Armin Mueller-Stahl plays in Avalon, I mean, I don't want to say he is your grandfather, but I mean, there's so many kind of parallels. And I wonder if that was one of the things that really, really touched you when you first saw Avalon.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, people ask me all the time because I write about movies for Entertainment Weekly, like, what's your favorite movie? And I think, I feel like they expect me to say Star Wars because I write about Star Wars.
Because you're like the official Star Wars reporter, yeah.
Yeah. Or to say something, you know, name some Oscar winner. And, like, you know, a classic film. And Avalon, it's from 1990,
it's
right?
1990, or 91? Yeah. It's 1990.
Yeah. It didn't win any awards. I don't think many people saw it. I don't think it did, like, tremendous box office. And I didn't see it until I was in my 20s. But it's the movie I treasure most. And I watch it a couple of times a year. I always watch it around Thanksgiving because so many of those family scenes in the film are set around Thanksgiving. And you know, by the time I saw it, my grandfather was gone. He had died when I was 19. And, you know, I talked about stories orienting you in your life and giving you, you know, purpose or understanding of the world. But he himself did that for me. And so his death was one of the most traumatic losses I've ever suffered. And I've lost two other grandmothers since then, but they lived into their 80s and 90s and they had good long lives. And his ended, you know, at 71, which when I was 19 seemed very old. And now that I'm 41, doesn't seem that far off. And, and Avalon is this story, you know, the two men, the grandfather played by Armin Mueller-Stahl has this great relationship with his son, his grandson, who's played by Elijah Wood when he was like 10 years old.
Oh, my God, I know. Those eyes, they're so bright.
Yeah. And I always love that relationship. And the way – and the grandfather tells these stories. The movie begins with him telling the story of how he came to America. And my grandfather was born here in America. His parents were Belgian immigrants. His father was a glass manufacturer who was brought over from Belgium to help manufacture window glass, you know. He would blow glass in these giant tubes and then warm it up and slice it open. And that's how they would make – glass for windows back in the, you know, the early part of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. So he was part of that immigrant experience and his parents knew what it meant to leave their home and come to this new country and set up a life. But he himself wasn't an immigrant. But other than that, there's so many similarities between him and the grandfather played by Armin.
The house painting, you know, the wallpaper hanging.
Well, yeah, when that happened in the movie, I was like, oh, come on.
Exactly. Like, I was like, they wrote this for you. Barry Levinson wrote this for you.
Because I was already like, oh, he tells this story about, you know, Sam Kaczynski is the name of the character. He tells this story at the beginning of the movie about coming to America. And it reminded me so much of stories my grandfather would tell about being a kid in Ford City, Pennsylvania, and the old days, and then he's a wallpaper hanger and a painter, and I'm like, come on, this is too. Am I like being punked here? But that's, you know, sometimes the universe gives you these interesting little cosmic coincidences. But there's so much that's different about that family from my own. They're direct immigrants. You know, it's sort of about the children of the immigrant parents, like played by Aidan Quinn and Kevin Pollak, like they're trying to adjust to be Americans and change their name to make it a little more Americanized, from Kaczynski to Kay. And,
yeah.
you know, our family, we were from Eastern Europe, the other side of my family, my father's side. But there weren't a whole lot of like surface similarities apart from some of the ones we already mentioned. Like, they're Jewish in the film, my family was Catholic, but like otherwise they're like exactly the same. And it reminds me how much how similar people are. Really, we think we're so different or we have these different cultures, but really they're all sort of variations on a theme. I think people, families are so much more alike than they are different.
Yeah, and it's that whole notion of the more specific you are to your experience, the more universal it becomes. Because when I watch this movie, I don't share nearly anything with them other than being an immigrant. That is it, you know? Mm-hmm. And yet I relate so much to the dynamics, to the way they talk to each other. I mean, I think part of it is that they're it feels improvised. I don't know how much of it was improvised, but a lot of the scenes feel like you're just kind of, it's almost like Barry Levinson, who directed it and wrote it, kind of set up a camera and just left and just allowed us to see what was going on in this family.
Well, the thing that I think hurts it, and it's something I love about the movie, so I would not describe it as a flaw, but in terms of reaching an audience and connecting with a broader audience, the fact that it doesn't really have a plot.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Is something that works against it. It's not like they're on a mission or there's a ticking clock.
Like, or like there's this horrible conflict that they have to face or overcome. And
yeah, it's just the story of one family, an extended family that comes to America, becomes a part of America, and then over time, due to the changing culture, separates from itself. The brothers who come over from, I forget which country they come over, but I think it's somewhere in Eastern
either.
Europe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the Ukraine or something, and they come over and they live together, they work together, they dine together, and then as they have their own families and their own careers take off, and some brothers are, and they're all brothers, I don't think there's a sister in that family, but some brothers are more financially successful than others, and that creates resentment because the older brother should technically kind of be the patriarch of the family. But then the more successful younger brother, played by Armin Mueller-Stahl, he sort of becomes the center of the family, and there's tension there. And like I said, the younger generation, they change their name to Americanize it. And then the even younger generation, played by Elijah Wood, they're being changed by television and mass media and really being immersed in American culture. And the way that pulls the family apart is beautiful and tragic. It's sad, but it's also wonderful. It's what happens. It's like throwing rose petals into a river. They hang together, they swirl around each other, but then gradually the current pulls them apart. And it may be a little bit tragic, but it's just the way of life.
Hmm. And also I feel like in many ways, even though there isn't a plot, what you're saying is so true. As I was watching the film, I was so conscious of the fact that it was going to end. And I just kept hoping that it wouldn't end like life, that there wouldn't be death, just because I could see that's going to be the tragedy, is that we all do die and we lose the people in our lives that we love. And that actually tension carried me through the film. I felt this tension the whole time watching it.
Yeah, because they're far in the past and we know that Sam Kuczynski is not going to be alive in 2017. And so we wonder where this movie is going to leave off. And I don't know if we want to spoil the ending or not.
I know.
I mean, it's a movie from almost 30 years ago.
1990. Can we spoil it? Yeah.
Yeah. But like the fact that it doesn't end with Sam being dead, where they leave him is so much more emotional than him in a casket or his gravestone.
Exactly.
You know, you see him at the end of his life, but the conversation he has with his grown-up grandson is one that I find very hard to even think about without getting emotional. It's so beautiful, but it is sad. And I like that feeling. That's why it's one of my favorite movies, is because it grabs me by the heart. Avalon, and has not let me go in the 20 years since I've seen it.
Ooh, right now I'm like holding it in, Anthony. I'm holding it in.
Hold it together. Hold it together.
Hold it together.
But there is, you know, another really sad moment, but the one that makes me angry is, you know, we see Sam's wife pass away.
Yeah.
Or we see her take ill, but then she's just gone and they're at the funeral.
Yeah. The wonderful Joan Plowright. How do you say her last name? Plowright?
Joan Plowright. Yeah. She's amazing in the film.
So good.
And so different from her husband, you know, and yet you can see how they work together. And at this funeral, if you remember, Sam is walking away with his son, played by Aidan Quinn. And there's been a falling out with one of his brothers that took place well before this, but that brother does not come to her funeral. And it struck me as such a true thing that at weddings and funerals, you're supposed to be happy and celebratory, or you're supposed to be grieving the person who's gone. But inevitably, instead of doing that, you end up hung up on some other family squabble. And it's almost a way of dealing with something that's a little more manageable, a little feud, rather than the unimaginable, this death, or even things that are happy are sometimes hard to wrap your mind around. And so you end up, you know, quarreling with so-and-so over something that happened 20 years ago.
That's true. That's true to life.
Living in the moment. Yeah. So when he walks away and he's like, you know, bitching about his brother not being there, you can see in a way he's grieving his wife, but he's also grieving his brother because here's something he will never be able to forgive. And that's, they're never going to be able to go back from that. So it's a very happy, there's a lot of funny moments in the movie too.
Yeah.
We make it sound like a downer, but you know, when the teacher is explaining to the grandfather who has what I think a pretty good grasp of English for an immigrant, but like she's scolding the boy over saying, can I go to the bathroom instead of may I go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
And the grandfather just doesn't understand. Like, what are you talking about? Like, when she's trying to explain
the difference between may and can. Yeah.
Yeah. Can he go or can he not?
Exactly.
Like, may and can and may. And then he's just like, I don't know. But, you know, there's so many funny scenes. Even, you know, something that I remember from my grandfather telling stories. And this happens to me now that whenever I'm with a group of people or old friends and I'm, you know, telling a story from the past, your memory is only so reliable. And I love that at one point he's telling the story of when all the brothers have come to America and then they bring their little old father over on the boat. And he's describing this, and the other brothers are like, no, it wasn't summer. It was winter. And then, like, the flashback we're seeing literally, like, changes seasons.
Yeah.
and it's funny how, like, those specific details can, you know, even, like, that should be an obvious one. And there's no reason to lie about it. It's just how your memory works. You remember it a certain way. And it's funny, my grandfather told me once, he was there when his mother died. She died at home. She was sick for a long time, and she was on her couch. They knew she was going, and he was there with her. And she had 13 children, and he was the only one who was there, happened to be there when she actually passed away. And he said to me, but my sister Mary, she came over after, but she told people that she was there with me. And he's like, I don't think she's lying to like aggrandize herself, but she wasn't there. I don't remember her being there, but she remembers it.
Wow.
So who's right?
Exactly.
Right? There's no record. There's no video of it, or obviously I was, you know, in the 40s. But like when he told me that, he was like, it's funny the way people remember things. Like, I don't remember her there, but maybe I'm wrong. And I think that's an interesting thing about storytelling too, is every time you tell it changes a little bit, and your memory changes with it. So that's an interesting little side note to Avalon.
As you were kind of talking through some of the moments that you love in the movie, I was reminded of a line that I know you love. You know, when Sam is seeing that grown-up grandson for us, we see the grown-up grandson for the first time in the kind of like senior citizens home that he lives in now. And he says that if I knew that things would no longer be, I would have tried to remember better.
Ugh,
that line.
Yeah. If I knew that things would no longer be there, I would have tried to remember better. Like Sam at this point in the movie he's got to be in his 90s.
Yeah.
And he's not all there, but enough of him is there that you can still detect the man that we know from the earlier parts of the movies. And he's what I thought was cool is his grandson is talking to him, but his great-grandson is in the room too. And the little boy is watching, like, I think he's watching like the Thanksgiving Day parade
on TV.
So he's not even really paying attention. And later as he's walking out with his dad, he says, that guy talks funny.
Yeah.
And his father says, well, he wasn't born here.
Yeah.
And he starts telling the same story that we heard at the very beginning of the movie about how Sam came to America. And that I'm not even watching it right now, but that chokes me up.
I know. We gotta stop it. We gotta stop it.
But when Sam is sitting, Sam is there in his room and he's just kind of rambling. He's just sort of spinning off memories, but he has a moment of lucidity and he says, I went back to the house on Poplar Street where Eva and I used to live, his wife. And it wasn't there. Not even the street was there. That in that time, so many things had changed in Baltimore that not even the street. And he mentions, you know, that going to this other place and that where he lived with his brothers and another shop he used to frequent, and they were all gone. And then he says, I went to see the nightclub I used to own, and thank God it was there because I was beginning to think I never was. And that's when he says, if I knew things would no longer be there, I would have tried to remember better. And what's so heartbreaking about that is nobody in this movie remembers things better than Sam Kuczynski. Like, he's the one who tells the stories. He's the one who has all the details.
Exactly. So what does that leave the rest of us?
And that's why it's so tragic, is that life slips by you. It just drifts by so quickly, and you can just try and grasp onto it as much as you can, but you also have to live in the moment. And I think clearly the thing he's not missing are the streets and the buildings. It's the people that were there with him. They are all gone. And if he knew that he would be the last one without any of them, he wished he had remembered them, or and through remembering them, had them with him still. Because when you remember something, it's there. It's there in your heart and in your head. And I just can't think of a more beautiful movie. So whenever somebody says, hey, what's your favorite movie? And I don't say Star Wars, and they look a little disappointed. And instead I say Avalon, and they go, what's that?
Exactly.
I actually feel, I don't know if anybody has ever actually, on my recommendation, sought it out, but I just think you are so lucky, because I wish I could watch this movie for the first time again, because it so moved me. But every time I watch it, it still has that same power.
Yeah, you know, this is always the magic of a great film, is that every time you watch it, it gives you a new gift. It gives you something new. And watching it this time around in preparing to talk with you, I was so struck with how the adults in the film talk to the children. They don't talk to them as children. And especially Sam. I mean, Sam talks to his grandson like he's a fully formed person. Like, he doesn't talk down to him. He treats him with this respect that really feels powerful to me now as an adult, as watching it. And I wonder, as you've gone through the years watching this film over and over again, you know, how have you grown together? What do you get from it now, the older that you get?
Well, now I have kids. You know, I have a daughter who's going to be 8 in a few weeks and a son who's 4. My son, well, another moment from the movie that matches my own life is when the grandson sees his grandfather at the end and he says, this is my son. His name is Sam. And the elder Sam says, you shouldn't name people after the living. And he's like, I know. And you get the sense that Sam is not always there, you know, that Sam in many ways is already gone. And we're seeing him just for a moment, you know, through that curtain. And my son's name, he's a very unusual name. It's Prosper, which sounds like a made-up Hollywood name, like like, you know, Apple or
exactly,
you know, something like that. But Prosper is an old Belgian name, and my grandfather, his name was Prosper Hubert, and my son's name is Prosper Joseph. He's also named after my uncle who introduced me to the movie Avalon, Uncle Joe. So in some ways, that movie is really tied in with my life, and it always will be. So I have this little boy and this little girl. They're too young for the movie. I just don't think they'd be interested in it now. But someday they'll be teenagers, and we'll watch it together, and they'll see their old man just melt down in tears over this film. And I hope it...
Like, what is wrong with Dad?
Jeez, boy, get it together. But they, hopefully it's something that, my daughter is very sensitive to this kind of thing, so I have no doubt about her. But my little boy, I hope he also sees it and realizes why his name means so much to me, that I would name him after, that I would burden him with this. What my grandmother, when we told her we had our daughter, she was like, what would you have named her if she was a boy? I was like, we would have named her Prosper after Pap. And she was like, oh, that's a terrible name. But like, why I would burden him with this, what my grandmother said was a terrible name, is because I had such deep love for this band. He will never know, you know, but if he sees this movie, he'll get some sense of that relationship.
Well, I feel like this is a gift. I mean, honestly, like, Avalon is a gift, and you talking about it is a gift, and I sound cheesy as fuck, but it's true.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me talk about it.
Oh, kidding me,
I love
yeah.
this movie so much, and there's, you know, it's just one of those things that you can almost, I find there's no one to talk to about it. You know what I mean? Like, very few people have seen it. In fact, I got a chance to meet Barry Levinson once.
Did you tell him?
And, like, and, yeah, you know, I try not to, like, geek out with people.
Yeah, I mean, you meet a lot of celebrities
I try to be a little
on a daily basis.
And,
yeah.
You know. But I did, at the end of our conversation, say, you know, I just want you to know Avalon means, like, so much to me. And you know, I've just spent a half hour telling you why, but with him, I was just like, I had a grandfather like that. It's so special to me. And I thought, well, this is not one of Barry Levinson's more successful films. Like,
no.
Maybe he would, you know, be great. I don't know what I expected. I guess I expected him to be more like, that's great. Thank you so much. Instead, he was just like, yeah, thanks. Like, he was unmoved. He was unmoved by how moved I was by this movie. But that's okay. I forgive him for that. I don't expect him to match my level of emotion about it. He created it, and without him, I would not have my favorite movie. So thank you, Barry Levinson, for this wonderful film.
Oh, so great, so great. One favor to ask of you, if you, now that you've experienced this interview, if you think of anyone who you think would be good for this, can you email Maya and let her know? Anyone you think would be really good at talking about a movie in this way? As I know, you have your encyclopedic brain.
I'll try to think of some people.
Yeah, but no worries. If you can, that would be awesome. Because it's hard to get someone to really reflect on one film in this way. And so anyone you can suggest would be great.
I'll do that.
Yay. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lily. Thank you for having me on.